Good day, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Henrik Palmgren. You are listening to Red Ice Radio, and we are coming to you from Gothenburg in Sweden. Thank you very much for tuning in to our program. And if you're a regular listener, you know that the website is redicecreations.com and that we're doing radio two times a week whenever we're not away shooting for upcoming films or attending conferences. Don't forget to follow along in our busy news section. It's updated frequently. And check out our members area, of course, with much more radio, films, lectures, video interviews, and more. And I'm very glad that you've chosen to tune in today because we have an exciting and important program ahead of us. Our guest is Alfred Weber. He's the founding father of Exopolitics. He is a peace advocate and a space activist who started the International Director of the Institute for Cooperation in Space, ICIS. That's dedicated to transforming the permanent war economy into a peaceful, cooperative, sustainable, new energy-based space-age society, preventing the weaponization of space and supporting cooperation amongst life in the universe. He is the co-architect of the Space Preservation Treaty to ban all space weapons and warfare in space, and established an independent outer space peacekeeping agency to monitor outer space and to enforce this ban. And there's so much more to say about Alfred and all the different things he's involved with. We have invited Alfred today to primarily discuss the bombing of the moon that NASA is planning to do in October under the LCROSS mission. And Alfred also recently was at the Exopolitics conference in Spain, which at least to me seemed to cause a bit of a media stir in Spain. Bob Dean also attended the conference there, and we hope to actually have him with us as well on the program soon. We were invited to attend the conference in Spain, but we could not make it because of other engagements, unfortunately. But I want to ask Alfred a little bit about the conference later on in the program as well. I want to mention some of the main websites that you can take a look at right away: exopolitics.com, exopolitics.org, and peaceinspace.com. And we have so much to talk about today, so I want to get right into it here right away. Alfred Weber, welcome to Red Ice Radio.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be with you.
It's so nice to have you with us, and thank you for your time. It's good to finally have you on. We tried to get you on before the Spain conference, but I understand how hectic things can get before going on a trip across the pond. But it's good to have you with us now anyway. And Alfred, before we talk about the NASA LCROSS mission and the October surprise, if we can call it that, maybe you can give people who might not be familiar with exopolitics maybe a little bit of an outline of what the term means, first and foremost, and also what the organization kind of primarily is doing, if you will.
Certainly. We like to call exopolitics the new political science of outer space. It's a social science, and it's a science of relations between our human civilization and other intelligent civilizations in the multiverse. I say multiverse because now science has shown that we live in an ecology of dimensions. With perhaps parallel universes to our own. And so many other civilizations that we may have contact with may actually be from other dimensions as well as from other solar systems within the dimension in which we live, and perhaps even also from parallel universes. The exopolitics model, which was first developed in 1999 with the writing of my book, Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe, the exopolitics model is sort of the inverse of the 20th century model of science. The 20th century model of science was that all higher intelligence in the universe ends at the Earth's geostationary orbit. And essentially, nothing had changed in science with regard to intelligence in the universe since the Middle Ages, or perhaps even earlier. And any professional, whether it be in government, in education, in the media, in business, who deviated from this 20th century model would be subject to either scorn and ridicule or loss of status, loss of employment,
yeah,
or perhaps even prosecution by the government. Well, the exopolitics model is a model of science for the 21st century, and it holds that we live in a populated and organized universe filled with evolving intelligent civilizations, which are operating under universe law, and which are mediated through universe politics. And our own civilization here on Earth is just at the stage of evolution where it's just becoming aware of the fact that we live in a populated and organized universe. So this is a bit of the conceptual background behind the exopolitics. In 2009 now, we're celebrating the first decade of exopolitics, and looking forward to the second decade, which is actually solar cycle 24, from 2009 to 2020, with a solar maximum coming in 2012 to 2013, which is a period in which other cosmic cycles also coincide. So that's just a bit of the background of exopolitics, which is really an interface tool with higher intelligent civilizations.
Okay, very, very interesting. And again, I want to return later on, talk a little bit about solar activity in 2012, of course, some of your points and your take on that. But what we can say again here then is that you basically started exopolitics, and maybe you just briefly can tell us why, or I guess how you got this idea, and what you have it become, what you envisioned it to be, or has it branched off and become more at this point, Alfred?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I first became aware of the field of extraterrestrials back in the early 1970s, where in 1972, I was the general counsel of the New York City Environmental Protection Agency. And at that time, I was, you know, I had long hair, I had a huge mustache, and I was a crusading environmental lawyer, but something within me was stirring and told me that in environmental protection, and in the paradigm within which I was operating, I was not encompassing the totality of the paradigm affecting public policy. So toward the end of 1972, I began reading several books in the area of parapsychology and the extraterrestrial area, and I began to inquire around to see if I could make contact with experts. Well, I did, and by the beginning of 1973, I had switched careers and began to work in the area of the paranormal and extraterrestrial and its relationship to public policy, which is my background, because I'm an international lawyer. So by the middle of 1973, I had written my first book in the area, which was published in North America and Japan, and which set out, amongst other things, the context communication theory of extraterrestrial communication, holding that communications by higher intelligent civilizations, or by other intelligent civilizations, was actually in symbolic form, much as the nature of a dream, and that we could interpret UFO encounters, for example, from a symbolic area, because the intelligence behind the UFO encounters was trying to communicate to us in a symbolic fashion.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And so by 1977, I was a futurist at Stanford Research Institute and was pursuing an extraterrestrial communication study with the White House of President Jimmy Carter.
Really?
Carter had promised to open the UFO and extraterrestrial files if he was elected president in the 1976 campaign. So when he won, I approached the Carter White House, and they approved the design of an extraterrestrial communication study, which would have been the first civilian extraterrestrial communication study in the U.S. Mm. All of the studies up to that point had been dominated by the military and intelligence areas. So very soon after that study got started, the Department of Defense contacted Stanford Research Institute and indicated that if the study was not stopped, they would terminate all funding to Stanford Research Institute.
Huh, really?
Which then constituted about 25% of its $100 million budget.
Oops.
So that the study was terminated, and that constituted my first personal and quite practical introduction to exopolitics. So, to fast forward to the years 1998 and 1999, I felt as though in many of the UFO studies and other studies, there was missing a systematic kind of field theory and study of how the universe functions in terms of intelligent societies. How prevalent are they? How are they organized? What are their goals? How do they interact with Earth? And that gave birth to Exopolitics, which I wrote in 1999 and then published in the year 2000. And then following that, throughout the decade from 1999 to 2009, there has been an acceleration of disclosures by governments about their secret UFO and extraterrestrial related files. For example, around 2002 to 2003 and 4, first Mexico, then Brazil, then Chile, Peru, then in 2007 France and the UK, they began to, governments began to release their extraterrestrial secret files, and then in 2008, this continued, and in 2009 we've had Sweden.
That's right.
And yeah, and Finland have released their secret files, and also in this time since the publication of Exopolitics in 2001, we had many high-level governmental officials, former government officials, and pilots, etc., come forward in the Disclosure Project, and also in other similar press conferences later, and high officials like former Deputy Prime Minister of Canada, Paul Pelliar, who in 2005 came forward and said that the U.S. was trying to foment an interstellar war with ethical ET society. So I feel that the whole concept of exopolitics has been like a concept that has gone into the collective mind, which has facilitated the acceleration of societal contact between our civilization and other civilizations, and that this will continue to accelerate during the coming decade as well, at an exponential rate.
Very, very interesting. And there's obviously many, many things I want to try to touch upon in regards to what you just said. But I think we should, at this point, try to dive into the LCROSS mission and NASA's bombing of the moon in October, and maybe from there springboard into some of these other areas as well. But just to recap quickly here again for people who haven't heard about this, NASA's LCROSS mission, they launched a lunar orbiter on June 19th this year, and is intended to bomb a location on the south pole of the moon on October 9th this year with a two-ton kinetic weapon, or two-ton kinetic weapons, creating a crater on the moon nearly 5 miles wide. And what you've said here also, Alfred, is that this bombing violates then space law, including the UN Outer Space Treaty and the Moon Treaty, and may actually trigger conflict with extraterrestrial civilizations based on the moon, which the U.S. government, NASA, have known about since the mid-1960s. And I guess that you also advocate, obviously, then the LCROSS bombing should be aborted before October 9th. But tell us a little bit about that. That's loaded. First of all, so to suggest that there is ET activity on the moon, but then that the human agencies here are going to go up and bomb this. What do you think is behind this, Alfred?
Well, first of all, before we even get to the question of ET, of possible ET presence on the moon, the LCROSS mission in itself, because it has an environmental impact on the moon, is a violation of international law and of space law. So even if we don't talk about extraterrestrials at all, the issue of sending a two-ton kinetic weapon in a purported scientific experiment to look for water is a violation of the terms of the treaties that you mentioned, the Outer Space Treaty and the Moon Treaty.
Yeah.
I've spoken to scientists, and what they state is that this is a very puzzling and strange experimental design, because if they're looking for water, what should have been designed is a lunar rover, and such as the Mars rovers, which would go in and test for water on the moon in ways that would have less of an impact on the lunar environment.
Mm-hmm.
And very, very briefly, and this is without talking about ETs at all. I mean, here you have one country, the U.S., on its own, just deciding to send a 2-ton kinetic weapon into the moon in violation of international law, and there's no uproar. Now, if we look at the various treaties, the Outer Space Treaty is a treaty that's been signed by 125 nations and ratified by 96 nations, including the U.S., and it provides that none of the signatories can do anything against international law.
Mm-hmm.
And that all of the any act, it prohibits any act of war and mandates that all acts with regard to the moon and other celestial bodies be peaceful. But even more than that, if we go to the Moon Treaty, which has been signed by major space powers like India and France, Article 7 there of the Moon Treaty prohibits and carrying out acts that would create a deleterious environmental impact and on the moon. And requires that all of these be done in consultation with the Secretary General of the UN. Well, clearly that's been violated here.
Yes.
And also the treaty against modification of the environment, which is signed in 1977, what the U.S. has both ratified and signed that treaty, that prohibits the use of any weapon which will modify the environment. And in the definition of what the environment is, it includes outer space.
Yeah.
In the definition areas. So the last time, I mean, we have now two wars underway, the war in Iraq and the war in Afghanistan, both of which were undertaken by the U.S. in contravention of international law.
Yeah.
There was no evidence that 9/11 was caused by people in Afghanistan. To the contrary, the evidence shows that the false flag operation of 9/11 was carried out by the highest levels of the government then.
That's right.
Of the U.S.,
yep.
Including President George W. Bush, Vice President Richard B. Cheney, and then Secretary of Defense Donald H. Rumsfeld,
yes.
And numerous John and Jane Does in the military intelligence establishment of the U.S. who used exotic weapons to bring down the Twin Towers, and who carried out a very large PSYOPs, psychological warfare operation, which is what 9/11 was.
Yes.
So the war in Afghanistan is illegal and is causing tremendous losses of civilian lives, which are not being reported in the media, and which has poisoned large sectors of Iraq with depleted uranium from the illegal use of depleted uranium weapons.
Yes.
And this was found by the Tokyo International Tribunal for War Crimes in Afghanistan, which found the illegal use of depleted uranium there by the U.S. and by the U.K. troops. And the same thing for Iraq. That war was started in 2003 in contravention of the UN Charter, which prohibits wars of aggression. It was started under false pretenses. It's resulted in the deaths of more than 1 million civilians, the displacement of 4 million civilians, and the poisoning of large areas of Iraq with depleted uranium weapons, which are yielding enormous changes to the genome and to the DNA of the people of Iraq and of Afghanistan. The number of birth defects has gone up tremendously.
Yeah.
And some researchers think that this is a policy of depopulation.
Yes.
So those are the last two wars that the U.S. has started without, in violation of treaties that it has signed, such as the U.N. Charter, which is an international treaty. Now, back to the question of the moon. So here, without getting to any questions about extraterrestrial civilizations on the moon or inside the moon, the U.S. has committed per se violations of treaties that it has signed and of treaties that in this case we believe function as international law, such as the Moon Treaty, because of the egregious violations of international environmental standards. Now, let's get to the question of whether there is any evidence that there may be extraterrestrial civilizations on the moon.
Yes.
And that this may be viewed as an act of aggression, or that there may be secret bases that now other nations such as China, Russia, Japan, and the European Space Agency are seeking to go to the moon, that the U.S. would want to eliminate traces of secret bases that either it itself has on the moon, or that extraterrestrials may have had in the past with the bombing. And
yes,
there's not only a planned bombing on October 9th, but there's a follow-on bombing of the same sort planned under the L-Cross mission.
Is that Alfred, sorry to cut you off there, but is that in another region, or are we still in the South Pole region of the moon for the second bombing?
I'm not totally sure. I know that if you go to the NASA website on L-Cross, and if you go to the various articles, they talk about a second L-Cross bombing planned.
Okay.
Let's look at some of the evidence that there may be extraterrestrial bases, an extraterrestrial presence on the moon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
First of all, we have the testimony of Air Force Sergeant Carl Wolf, who was a Disclosure Project witness in the 2001 press conference. And what he says is that in 1965, he was in a secret National Security Agency, NSA, facility, and that there he was shown detailed pictures and documents setting out an extraterrestrial base on the far side of the moon that NSA had discovered and photographed and documented thoroughly. Secondly, if we look at the Apollo 11 mission with Buzz Aldrin and others, there is, first of all, we have the statements of Buzz Aldrin in a television documentary, Apollo 11, The Untold Story, in which he himself states that when the Apollo 11 module landed in the moon, there were two very large and very aggressive, apparently extraterrestrial spacecraft at the edge of the crater in which the Apollo 11 module was landing.
Yes.
Then we have multiple high-level NASA witnesses who testify to a colloquy that went back and forth on the communication special secret communication channel. This was not part of the public media, between Apollo 11 and the mission control in Houston, in which the colloquy goes to something to the effect of, gee, Houston, there are these very large craft at the edge of the crater, and no, they do not look like they want us to be here. And in subsequent dialogue, which was publicly reported, Buzz Aldrin and others state that no, we did not stop going to the moon of our own volition. It was clear that the extraterrestrials did not want us building moon bases there.
Oh, really?
We were chased off.
Really?
Yeah. So, and then there have been other reports of lights on the moon, very large lights, and also of explosions. So there may be industrial activity going on the moon, mining going on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
And these may have been accidents. You know, we don't know the exact nature of these, but it's clear that there are reports of activity on the moon other than from the Apollo missions. Then Robert Dean at the 2009 Exopolitic Summit in Spain reported that, yes, the U.S. has bases both on the moon and on Mars.
Really?
And one of the witnesses there, Henry Deacon, it's a pseudonym, who's a former employee, top secret, of the National Security Agency, NSA, he's now defected from the NSA, stated on camera that he has been to Mars, that there's a teleportation corridor between Earth and Mars that takes people from Earth to a base on Mars, and that he has been there to participate in meetings at one of the bases there, in which his Martian counterparts, from an intelligent civilization that lives under the surface of Mars, were present around the table.
Mm.
So it's clear from whistleblower testimony and also from the testimonies of Sergeant Carl Wolf, a whistleblower, and also from the testimonies of Buzz Aldrin and high NASA employees who have verified this colloquy taking place at the time of the landing of Apollo 11, that both Mars and the moon are populated, and that there are, you know, there's testimony that there are bases on Mars. And
Alfred, I want to ask you something here about in regards to NASA as well. As far as what I've heard, at least, that NASA is actually a military program, and I think even Buzz Aldrin mentioned that in a recent interview he did on C-SPAN, that he was one of his honor as a military was to salute the American flag up on the moon and all that, but which then implies that NASA is a military program. So do you think that this could be about the expansion or starting of a war in some kind, or do you think that this is, as you alluded to a little bit earlier, simply about actually covering up some kind of previous civilizations or evidence for that on the moon now when other nations are beginning to get their eyes on the moon? China, India, you know, what have you. What do you think, Alfred?
Well, I wouldn't want to speculate, but we can speculate. I think that you have raised all of the possibilities. We know that the moon, there's good evidence, and NASA has had evidence that the moon is inhabited since at least 1965. And that's a matter of public record now. So for it to take acts with a kinetic weapon, a 2-ton kinetic weapon, which per se of itself violates international and space law, that's sort of adding, layers of violation. If in fact there is a hostile intent to these, to the L-Cross mission, which if scientists say that it's an inappropriate design and what should have been used is a lunar rover, then I think that there's a plausible, there's a threshold of possibility has been reached where this may, L-Cross may not only be a violation of the treaties from an environmental point of view, but also from a hostilities point of view, because all three of the treaties, that is the Outer Space Treaty, the Moon Treaty, and the Treaty Against Environmental Modification, all three of those flatly prohibit any act of war or hostility in space, and especially on the moon, which is the first celestial body that humanity has been focusing on publicly. Now, we know that, to talk about your question about NASA being a military agency, that has many levels to it, and it's a complex issue. But yes, when NASA was originally formed by the National Aeronautic and Space Act of 1958, it was formed as a civilian agency, and space in that act was forever dedicated to the civilian population of Earth. And the mission of NASA was to explore space from a civilian scientific point of view and to share its knowledge with the population. Now, what occurred are two things. First of all, we know that since at least 1971, the U.S. government, in the form of the Central Intelligence Agency, CIA, has been having a secret liaison relationship of some sort with the intelligent civilization that lives under the surface of Mars.
Really?
And that's, yes, and that's because whistleblower, U.S. whistleblower Andrew D. Bashago, states that in the company of his father, who was a CIA agent, he met with three Martian astronauts at Curtis Wright Air Force Base in 1971. Also, that in 1980, on two separate occasions, he went to Mars in the company of a CIA agent, Courtney Hunt. So we have all the specific names, and he went from a CIA teleportation facility to Mars that's located in El Segundo, California. So we have all of these dates from his whistleblower testimony. And you can go to exopolitics.com for more information on Mr. Bashago's activities with regard to Mars, including the discovery of life forms and animal forms in NASA photographs from the rover, Mars rover Spirit. Now, so we know all of these things as facts now from whistleblowers, and we know that with the passage of the years, then, the U.S. has had a, quote, secret space program, or actually a secret time-space program, because of their experiments in teleportation and time travel teleportation.
Sheesh, that's just insane.
According to Mr. Bishago's testimony.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Secondly, so that we have a secret time-space program, and we have a public space program. And increasingly, that public space program, which is run by NASA, as opposed to the teleportation program, which is secret and is run by CIA and Department of Defense, increasingly, NASA and the NASA payloads have been military in nature.
Really?
And now we have a situation where the top personnel and the missions of NASA are increasingly military, where the shuttle will be being phased out, and where the moon, at least Mars, we know for sure, will be serviced not by spacecraft, but rather by teleportation that takes just a matter of seconds or minutes.
Do you think, Alfred, that they will do this officially, or will this teleportation program be carried on behind closed doors, so to speak?
Well, our organization, the Mars Anomaly Research Society, with regard to Mars, and certainly exopolitics.com, we have a petition underway where we are going to request that the U.S. secret bases on Mars, that the existence of life on Mars be made public by President Barack Obama and by NASA and other agencies. And in the alternative, what we'll be doing in parallel will be to bring Freedom of Information lawsuits against NASA, and to make their knowledge of the existence of life on Mars and of U.S. teleportation and of U.S. bases on there public. Because this was made according to the original legislation of NASA, which is to explore the universe and to make this information public. And all of this is being done with U.S. taxpayer funds.
Yeah, that's right.
And the U.S. has the right to know. And also, it has to become an issue of public debate whether or not what the intentions of the U.S. are. Are they there to colonize Mars and as the beginning of the colonization of the solar system using teleportation, or what exactly is the nature and mission of the U.S. presence on Mars? These should be public questions, especially now, since we have another threshold being violated by NASA and by the U.S., and that is the bombing of the moon through the L-Cross mission, which is in violation of 3 international treaties.
Yes, that's right. And Alfred, I want to ask you as well. I remember the Deep Impact mission back in 2005, where they crashed, or a similar thing with a projectile into a comet, which they dubbed the Temple 1. Don't know if you remember this, but this, from my point of view, is a similar type of violation. Isn't that right? Do you remember this?
Yes. So there are specifications. What we're dealing with here is the moon, which is our closest celestial body, and which other nations are now planning to go to. And so this is especially important that international treaties be observed. And then we add the further complicating dimension that there's evidence that there may be extraterrestrial bases and civilizations on the moon, and would this not be interpreted as a hostile act?
Yeah.
So these are issues of international law which are being violated by NASA in the same way that the U.S. violated the U.N. Charter and other treaties the Geneva Conventions and other treaties like the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court in invading Iraq and in invading Afghanistan. And so here we have a power that just arrogates unto itself the right to invade other celestial bodies with weapons without any public debate and in direct contravention of treaties that it has signed. And these are the concerns that I've raised publicly and why I think it's important that these issues be examined.
Absolutely. And, that's only on the law side of things. And I want to ask you a little bit about, what can be done in regards to, bringing this up into court or what you're doing in regards to that. But I want to backtrack a little bit first and just ask you, if we indeed were run off the moon, as you said, back in the 70s or so, and basically haven't been back since, at least not officially, the question is, of course, what do you think would be the consequence for this action with this bomb going off if it indeed are extraterrestrials and advanced ET civilizations on the moon, Alfred?
Well, yeah, just to note a couple of things. There were several Apollo missions that did land on the moon after Apollo 11.
Yes.
But the program was terminated. Secondly, the weapon that is being used in Elcross is a kinetic weapon. It does not have explosives. And that is, they take the 2 tons, the 2 tons of a kinetic weapon, which in this case is an Atlas rocket, which is being sent toward the moon. And that qualifies as a kinetic weapon in that context. A kinetic weapon does not carry explosives with it. Rather, it's the momentum of the kinetic weapon which causes the damage.
Yes, but the effects are very similar, that's the trick.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. So what I'm saying is that taken into account, this act could be construed as a hostile act. Mm-hmm. By extraterrestrial civilizations, which may be based on the moon, which we know from previous evidence were based on the moon as of 1965. Hmm. So when you add to the fact that 3 treaties are being violated and that this may be a hostile act, certainly the world community and the people of the world should be concerned when a power like the United States, which has acted within the last several years, carrying out wars of aggression, which under international law can be considered genocidal and crimes against humanity, as those terms are used in the Geneva Conventions and in the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court. Mm-hmm. We have the same nation that may be carrying out an act of aggression against civilizations that are based on the moon. So, but even if you don't believe that there are extraterrestrials on the moon, or even if you are not ready to concede that there is an extraterrestrial presence in the universe, those acts by themselves, because of their environmental damage, violate existing standards, including the Outer Space Treaty and the Moon Treaty.
Yeah, that's right. And the question that arises as well is, whose property is it? Is it, who gets to go there? What can we do there? Is there any kind of, as you know, of international law that states then that it belongs to all of humanity or what, one country, or how does it work? Do you know any details on this?
Sure. All of the law so far is contained primarily in the Outer Space Treaty and the Moon Treaty. And what the Outer Space Treaty says, essentially, is that all celestial bodies are universal commons, like the law of the sea. Nobody owns the Atlantic Ocean or the Pacific Ocean, but rather it's a commons. And the same sort of principle has been applied to celestial bodies.
Oh, really? So, it's maritime law up on space. Really?
Yes. Yeah. So, there's a special branch called the Law of the Sea.
Yes.
And so, no nation can claim sovereignty over any celestial body, including the moon.
Mm.
And the moon is mentioned especially in the Outer Space Treaty and in the Moon Treaty. And so the moon is like the Atlantic Ocean or the Pacific Ocean.
Yes.
And here we're dealing with the fragile ecology of celestial bodies, especially the moon. And so that's why we're saying that L-Cross is a violation, the bombing of L-Cross is a violation of the Outer Space Treaty and of the Moon Treaty, and that that the bombing should be terminated, plans for the bombing should be terminated prior to October 9th, 2009.
And, yes, go ahead.
Yeah, when the bombing is contemplated.
That's right. And Alfred, I want to, I think it's a good time to begin here to round things up, our first hour, first segment, and then begin talking more in our members area. But I do want to ask you if you have any kind of, let's say that someone want to get in some way involved, and you know, do you have any petitions people can sign or, you know, get on the bandwagon, so to speak, and try to stop this, or what is going on? Can people go to your website to find out more about this?
Yes, we have written an extensive article on this issue in our column at examiner.com. It's a nationwide newspaper in the U.S. Online newspaper, and if you want to access this quickly, just go to exopolitics.com, which is our website, and you can click there. You can also petition NASA directly at their website, nasa.gov, and you can either fax or email the director there, as well as the director of L-Cross. And the director of L-Cross has publicly stated, so that you can see what respect NASA has for international law,
mm-hmm.
that are, and I'm giving you a direct quote, that the arguments that we have put forth are, quote, rubbish. So they're taking a stonewall approach, and they're stonewalling the entire issue.
Yeah.
So we urge people to contact them back, so that at least we have the voice of public opinion coming back. I mean, you remember that there were 50 million people on the streets in the weeks before the illegal invasion of Iraq in 2003, and trying to stop that war, which is genocidal and crimes against humanity, and which is a deep war crime. And we had the same type of arrogance from the Bush administration at that point. Well, the same type of arrogance now exists in NASA with regard to LCROSS.
That's right. And so let's begin here, Alpha, to round things up. I want to mention again the websites, of course, exopolitics.com, exopolitics.org. Check out peaceinspace.com as well. And we will add links to NASA.gov and the Examiner article that Alfred mentioned as well. And before we round things off here, though, for the first segment, first hour here, tell people how they can get a copy of your book as well if they're interested in reading more of your work and material, Alfred.
Yes, people can go either to exopolitics.com or to amazon.com and just look up my book, which is Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe. And that's the easiest way to get it.
Wonderful. The book, again, is Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe. Do check it out. Stay with us, Alfred. We'll be right back after this break. Go to redicecreations.com. Click on subscribe if you're not yet a member. You do not want to miss our continuation with Alfred Weber as we discuss the current conditions on Earth, the war or battle that is ongoing between dark and controlling forces and the benevolent, more well-intended higher-dimensional beings, as Alfred terms it. And humanity is, of course, lodged right in the middle at this time. We talk about the current time we're in, the natural evolution that is happening right now, with emanations from the central of our galaxy, which affects our sun and, of course, us, and we are changing as a consequence to this. We discuss the solar peak around 2012-2013. We talk about calendar cycles, the secret space program, the changing and alteration of human DNA, genetic interference by negative reptilian forces. And we discuss the time travel and testimony from Andrew D. Basiago about an already present human civilization on Mars. So what is NASA doing there? Why are they keeping it a secret? And are there other kind of black ops funded programs ongoing that use teleportation and time travel technology? So don't miss this second hour with Alfred Weber for Red Eyes members. Go to our website. You'll find all the details on how to sign up, get instant access, and tune into our program. It's very easy, and we have tons of material waiting for you in our members area. I also want to mention that we have next upcoming on the show, David Icke. We have Freeman joining us, Catherine Austin Fitz, Rand Flemouth, Freddie Silva, and we hope to have Bob Dean with us soon as well. And lots of good video stuff coming for all you members. We'll be right back after this break.
Some of the things I never told. I hardly touch the phone. I don't know who to call. You're my relief and you're the one who makes me cry. I'm trying to figure out some way to get on by. 'Cause I can't change, I'm not the same, not forever. What can I say? I'm not okay, I wish I was. I want you back, I want a time I can't remember. It's as simple as I say. Change, I'm not the same, not forever. So I go out at night, take walks down East Street. So talkative, no matter who I see. I wake up shaking, not alone, but on my own. I need some other guy. I'm not the same. You want this part of me, the song lies in your mind. that's who I'm trying to be, and that's what you will find if you just let me in. Take me back closer than we ever were. I promise it's for real, 'cause I can change. I'm not the same, not forever. What can I say? I'm not okay, I wish I was. I want you back, I want a time I can't remember. It's as simple as I say, I can't change, I'm not the same. Yeah, I have changed, I'm not the same, not forever. What can I say? I'd be okay and so would you. I can't change, I'm not the same.